Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Yet another day inside, as a part of rather, Texans training camp. And reminder, we will talk to Sean Pendergast, courtesy of Fly by Yuengling, live from West Virginia at 12:40. Before we get there, let's go around the NFL. And we begin with some notes from what we're seeing out of West Virginia. Another day of practice. And I don't know, are we going to look at this as, I don't know if we're looking at this as a winning day for the offense. I can't imagine that that's what I see from the reports out there. They finished out practice. I guess I'll work backwards with some drills that ultimately ended up with the first team being stopped, the second team throwing a pick, and the third team throwing a pick six, which I thought was kind of hilarious in its, I guess, you know, its hierarchy there.
Yeah. It's a credit to the coaching staff and front office for knowing the depth chart well. They got the teams right, at least. They got the right people on the first team, right people on the second team, right people on the third team. We're not mixing that up, at least.
EJ Speed with the pick, though. That is good within that linebacker space. I don't, of course, didn't get a chance to see it. We'll talk to Sean to get more insight on that portion of it. But it's good to see. I don't know what your level of concern is with the offensive line, just generally. But I think, or not offensive line, goodness gracious, wrong words entirely, with the linebacking core. But that seems to be, if you were to find a weak spot in this defense, that would be it. Good to see some you know, kind of coverage situations happening with the linebackers.
Yeah, for sure. That is, of course, the concern on defense for me, or just up the middle. I mean, even defensive tackle. But what I've said all along is that I think this defense is talented enough elsewhere that it'll cover up any sort of holes they might have at a linebacker position or in the interior defensive line. It's almost like, you know, zone defense in basketball where you can hide somebody because they're not as good of a defender. I think the talent on the outside of this defense will be good enough to make up for the rest of that. But with that said, yeah, to see plays being made in coverage specifically, but playmaking ability from the linebacking core is another huge bonus. And if you get that, this defense is going to be even that much better. But it is the concern of the defense, but for me, I don't have a lot of big concerns with this defense in general because I just think it's, you know, incredibly talented.
Yeah, and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Sounds like a big day for the defense. And one thing, though, I will note, Damian Pierce working off to the side. I think it was Jonathan Alexander who made the note that seemed to look good, cuts look good, looked fast. So those are good things. Hopefully that would mean that sometime relatively soon, we'll see Damian Pierce integrated with the team. And he needs this camp. He does.
He does. I've always been a Damian Pierce guy. I kept trying to find ways to defend him last year. I'm glad he's still on this roster. I think there's still a role for him, and he can provide some value to an NFL team. So I'm glad he's still on the roster. But, yeah, like you said, he's got to get out there now. I mean, this is the opportunity, especially with Mixon out. You bring in a rookie in Woody Marks. You bring in Nick Chubb, who's new to the team and coming off those injuries. I mean, this is your chance, maybe your last chance if you're Damian Pierce. You got to get yourself on the field and show something, and I think he can. I think he can fit this system and this offense well and still provide something of value for the Texans.
All right. Well, again, we'll get more into your Texans as we continue throughout the day. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans at noon, and then also, again, Sean Pendergast, 12:40. But continuing around the NFL, you know, training camp happening all over when it comes to the NFL, and thankfully there has not been too many injuries of note. And there's been the one with Keonta Hamilton with the Texans, and thankfully it's been limited to that. Unfortunately, a former Texan had a serious injury with the Raiders. Safety Lonnie Johnson Jr. Seemingly suffered a very serious injury. I believe that it was a broken fibula.
Oof.
During the Saturday practice at Allegiant Stadium. He had to be carted off the field. Like, and this is truly carted off the field, not in the same way as we were doing with Justin Fields a week ago. But he ended up colliding with Max Crosby trying to tackle Raheem Mostert. Just a reminder, man, like, again, injuries happen in this sport in general, just in the nature of playing it. So, again, prayers up, and I guess a lot of fortune or a lot of kind of good fortune or good, I guess, thanks I would have put out there. That the Texans have not suffered too much of those.
That kind
of
sucked for him too, man.
Very much
because
so.
He's probably trying to make the team. It's not like he got a guaranteed spot. Kind of been bouncing around a little bit, so that sucks for him, man.
1 year, $1.6 million is the deal that he's on, and it's his fifth team. Like, this is, you're right. He's
been bouncing around trying to stay on a squad, and this obviously ain't going to help.
100%. So that sucks for him, obviously. Hope for a speedy recovery, but yeah, that's not good for Lonnie Johnson Jr., who I imagine was really scrapping to make that Raiders team. Some other things around the NFL. People getting paid. There's a lot of people getting paid. I try not to like get into every single person who gets paid, but this one was these two. There's a pair of players that got paid this weekend that I thought was interesting for one of the big stories that we've been keeping a track of. So I'll start with mentioning that the Dolphins defensive tackle Zach Seiler, who I recall playing pretty well against the Texans when they played against each other in what was that week 15 after the bye week. He ended up getting a extension. I think it was a 3-year, $67.75 million extension. I believe that ends up being in the space of like 22.5 a year for him. So, you know, he gets into that space where not amongst the elites on defensive line, but he slides in that second level, I think thereabouts. And then also joining him, Broncos pass rusher Zach Allen agreed to a 4-year deal worth $102 million, again in a similar space, 25.5 annual average annual value to slide into that, again in that range of those secondary guys. He, mind you, I think he has the last couple of seasons of, or he, you know, I think he had 8.5 or was it 10 in the last couple of years for him, sacks, that is. So you're seeing some of those guys in that space. Of course, I don't think that says anything about the Texans, thankfully, but I don't know if you went to this place, thought of Trey Hendrickson, who currently mm-hmm. makes less on average annual value than these two gentlemen Jeez. Now do. And I'm like, this has got to steal his resolve to hold in as he is now with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, that's got to irk him because he is much better. I think for these guys, these are fair paydays. Like you said, they're not that top tier. They're in maybe that next tier and at least. And so that makes it a fair payday for them. You know, I think the concern with Trey Hendrickson is that he is a little bit older now, in his 30s. These guys are still in their 20s, so that's the one thing working against him. But he is, I think, the superior pass rusher of these two. So you try to use that as your ammo now of like, hey, look how much these guys, I need to be getting more. If these guys are now getting paid more than me, these guys who the typical NFL fan probably couldn't even name or pick out of a lineup. So I would be irked if I was Trey. He's better. He's a better pass rusher. He should be making more than them, but he is also a little bit older, and that might be a concern.
I'm glad you mentioned Trey Hendrickson being a little older, because we can get to the philosophical standpoint of this, which is, would you be in a position, or if you were in a position like Mike Brown, which I wouldn't want to put you in, because I hope you would be significantly less cheap than he is, would you be in that space where you question paying the 30-year-old? Like, obviously, at some point, you have to consider age and what you are going to be able to continue to squeeze out of a player. Before Trey Hendrickson, who has played at that level, where would you fall on that? Maybe not specifically him, but just the idea of the pass rusher reaching around that age. Because again, TJ Watt was also in a somewhat similar space when you were looking at paying him. Obviously, the Steelers, they got to that place. I think it's necessary in, you know, where they are as a team and what they're trying to accomplish. But just in a vacuum, how do you feel about paying the 30 or almost 30 pass rusher the highest echelon of money?
I would be concerned. He's been so good the last 2 years, though, that I guess for him, you'd be willing to take the risk and hope that there's not that steep drop-off as he's set to turn 31 this year. But certainly that's a concern in general. Like, Jared Allen just went into the Hall of Fame this weekend, and he was one of my favorite when he was in the league. He was one of my favorite players in the league at the time. I love Jared Allen. But if you go back and look, same thing. At that age, that's when he dropped off at 31 and then was out of the league 2 years later, and he was a Hall of Famer. So there is that concern of once these guys get into their 30s, they're not the same player. How long do you want to invest? He's so good, that defense is so bad, but at the same time, it reminds me of, I wish I could remember the baseball manager or GM who always used to say, going back years ago, of like, you know, we lost 100 games with you, we can lose 100 games without you. And so my point being, that defense is already so bad, even with his 18 sacks, that it's like, do we need to pay a 30-year-old pass rusher all this money where even without him, our defense is probably going to be just as bad?
That's kind of, I feel like that's how the Texans thought with Laremy Tunsil. Like, you had a expensive left tackle, and the offensive line was still bad. So why not get rid of this expensive left tackle and try to make it work with some cheaper deals?
Now, that's a great comparison. The only thing that I will highlight is where my brain was going, which is, why are we assuming it can't get worse? You know what I mean? Like, that defense for the Bengals, oh, man, it was bad. You think it might not be worse if you don't apply the level of pressure? Trey Henderson was able to apply.
Probably will be.
It would be worse, but you just got to out-offense everybody at this point.
Yeah, lean in. Lean into that philosophy.
Just load up on the offense.
Yeah,
Joe Burrow's got to get hazard pay at that point. Like, come on, man.
He's going to be losing 50-48 all season long.
Yeah, they like set records last year for points scored in losses. You know, just brutal. Brutal for Burrow on that offense.
Yep, and it seems like Trey Henderson has renewed, like, desire to hold in until he gets his money. So we'll see how that continues to play out, and obviously we'll continue to watch that space. You know, something I have been deeply interested in, to the point where I'm not even sure how much everybody else is interested in it, to be completely honest, but it's the NFLPA and their, their executive director and their executive council and the ways in which their presidents and all of this has been handled. Pablo Torre and Mike Florio have continued to be on the space. And today, or actually this weekend, we learned of them appointing their new director. I believe in an interim status, actually, if I remember correctly. But they have a new director when it comes to what they're doing there for the NFLPA. And of course, his name escapes me as soon as I get there. But it's David White, and that's why, because it's kind of generic. David White he's been elected as an interim executive director. It's worth noting that he was one of the two finalists to be executive director when they ultimately hired Lloyd Howell, who jumped in, and, he had the strip club incident when it comes to expensing all that. But when it comes to figuring out, like, the ways in which the larger story that I know Pablo Torre has done a lot of reporting on, that kind of seems to point towards J.C. Treader trying to establish a level of cronyism, his guys in there, to be able to figure out who's the director that is kind of under his gun that would need J.C. Treader, put in a NFLPA president that he could, kind of massage. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, actually, the latest reporting that they put out there seemingly indicates that all of this was possibly, if you follow the money, to be able to get work with. I don't know if you heard about the scandal with one team partners, which is what the NFLPA and the MLBPA and some other players associations use to, kind of as a company to negotiate their name, image, and likeness rights with the likes of Madden and these types of things, that they kind of had put together an executive payout situation that would have taken some of the benefits, some of the monetary benefits that would have come from the player's name and images and likeness, and found a way to filter it in back in to the executives rather than into the association and towards the players that ultimately should be getting paid from this. Like, the large kind of scale of all of the funniness around this executive director, it does feel like once you ultimately get to the money is some malfeasance to get these dudes paid from where the players, the actual, people in the union should be getting money.
Right. Do you think, because I haven't been following this certainly as closely as it seems you have, do you think this leads to any big changes down the road for that union? Like, we're gearing up for an expected lockout in the WNBA, and they're trying to strengthen things there. Major League Baseball is supposed to have a lockout in 2027. They have a really strong union. The NFL has not had the same issues in the past because the union has never had the same power as specifically baseball. Do you think all of this, like, what will come of this? Do you think it helps strengthen the players' union? Will there be any sort of big change, or we just move forward status quo?
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to David White, at the very least, I imagine he might be a little bit better than Lloyd Howell Jr., because he at least has been a union head for SAG-AFTRA when it comes actual actors and everything. Although he did seem to play ball with the union that that operates for producers, which would be playing on the other side of the line, which is a little disconcerting. However, he seems to understand unions. The problem is, with all of this, it's the way that they've been operated, the way that various people were voted into positions, and the way in which the union membership has been kept in the dark on various things, which I imagine the NFL just continues to look at the PA and says, the way that y'all operate makes it very clear that you're not going to consolidate power in order to actually battle the NFL. So no, I don't think that you're going to end up in a better place for the Players Association and the NFL with all of the reporting that continues to come out about the way that they've been operating. So more power to them. We'll see if at least getting someone who understands unions might help them a little bit. And finally, before we go, NFL Top 100. I've been getting updates on this. You were excited about this.
Can't wait.
As voted on by the players, we got a few to catch up on. Terry McLaurin, number 52, as he continues to seek to be traded right now from his team. Kyle Hamilton comes in at 51, the safety for the Ravens. And now we've dipped into the 40s now. Number 50 is Baker Mayfield. Still no C.J. Stroud. Quinyon Mitchell, who is the cornerback for the Eagles, comes in at 49 as well. Thoughts?
I can't wait to find out in, 24 days, who are ahead of these guys. Where do they rank Terry for the top receivers in the league? Tune in 4 weeks from now to find out. I can't wait.
It really is incredible that this has continued to unfold.
I'm just curious to see, how mad are we going to be if Baker Mayfield is ranked ahead of C.J. Stroud? Are we throwing a fit?
It would have to be a lot, right? Because at this point, Baker Mayfield is 50. In order for C.J. to be below Baker Mayfield, he'd have to not crack the top 100.
Yeah, that would be a big conversation.
Yeah, I'd be sick. I'd be sick. So we'll keep you abreast of what's happening there. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I do kind of want to go back to baseball real quick. Sorry, I've been enamored with the trade deadline for the Astros. More nuggets came out, mind you, around the trade deadline. Which of these nuggets, when it comes to the Astros, is the most important in understanding what this team is going through, or maybe that you would want to see? 713-572-4610. I'll give you the nuggets as per Bob Nightingale next.